listening to Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live, a podcast exclusively for high school sports in Arkansas. Here are your hosts, Nate Olson and Kyle Sutherland.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on episode 39 of Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live. I'm Kyle Sutherland, alongside the baseball guru, Kevin Bohannon, and we want to welcome you into our MLB draft recap, along with the final installation of our Spring State Champions recap that will conclude with myself and BJ Zipfel in the second segment, who was the winning coach of the Class 4A state champion Valley View Lady Blazers. This is going to be our final episode for the next couple of weeks, at least until we get into August when we fully transition into football season. But with six native Arkansans picked in the Major League Baseball draft that just concluded, we want to give Kevin a chance to give some analysis. We know that I would not be very good at that if I was the one giving the analysis. But before we close out or close the book on baseball for 2022, we want to make sure we do that and give those guys their due credit. But Kevin, it's good to be back with you, especially since over the last four or five shows, we have both been involved, but we've not actually communicated.
That's right. You know, going back and getting to talk with each state high school baseball and softball state championship coach, it was really cool because you got to really hear some good stories from some really good coaches. And I hope the fans and our listeners really enjoyed it. It was really cool to get, you know, with Shane Fullerton, and everybody had something good to say about just a good story to talk about. So that was really cool. And, you know, the MLB draft is kind of the bow on everything as far as it starts in January because you got preseason, then baseball, and it all wraps up now in the second, third week of July now. So really excited for these boys. I got to sit with Caden Wallace the other night and his family going through the draft, and it was stressful. Thing worked out for them, and excited for these guys.
Yeah, and that's the first one that we'll be talking about here. And five, Caden was actually, he was, of course, the first native Arkansan picked, and he was the only one that wasn't a right-handed pitcher, not just a pitcher, but a right-handed pitcher. And five of six of these picks, weren't they all right? All of them are righties. None of them are lefties, right? Correct?
Yeah, they're all righties.
That's what I was thinking.
And I'll tell you this. Jordan Wicks, who was drafted last year by the Cubs in the first round, James Hicks and Tyler Cleveland all played on the same prospects team at one time. It was really cool.
That's
so
pretty cool.
And then Hicks and Wicks were at Conway together. So some really good arms, you know, coming out of the state. Of course, Hicks went to Crowder as a walk-on, and then he was a mid-80s arm, had a really good slider, but never really got past 88. South Carolina, he got to Crowder, got better, went to South Carolina, got even better, you know, got a tick up to 92, 94 with his fastball. Now you know he's a 15th round draft pick. So congratulations to him. And then Tyler Cleveland, who I've known since he was 11, 12 years old, and watching him grow up, he went to Sheridan, of course, and I got to I think his sophomore, junior year, we were at Sheridan in 2016, and I was behind the plate working. And he came in and pitched a masterful game. I think he threw like a two or three hitter shutout in the state tournament. And he was over the top high three quarter pitcher. When he got to UCA, they dropped him down to that slot, to that low sidearm slot, almost knuckle dragger, you know, coming from underneath. And it made him a really effective pitcher. He was a two-time conference pitcher of the year. Really happy for him and his family. He went through the workout circuit, went to multiple clubs. I know he went to Kansas City to work out, and he got picked by the Mariners. So if he gets to Double A with the Travelers, he could be playing in front of a lot of a big old home state crowd.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Obviously, we're big Razorback fans. You cover the Razorbacks and followed the baseball team. Really, I guess pretty heavily for me, I've followed the baseball team since DVH has been there a little bit when Norm was still around. But it's really cool to see the Razorbacks, of course, but just these homegrown kids, whether it doesn't matter if they go to to Arkansas or whether they go to a D3. I don't really care what it is. It's cool to see these guys, all the hard work that pays off. And obviously you as a coach that has coached some of these guys and so many others, I know that it's extremely rewarding, you know, once you get to that point. But we'll get going with day one that started Sunday, the first day that had rounds one and two. As we mentioned, Caden Wallace was the first native Arkansan picked. Now, I know he played third base last year, but I know that some, and I'll let you get into this, I know many have said that he projects more probably to the outfield, or at least that's some people's opinions of it. And Kevin, he went to the Kansas City Royals, the Greenbrier native. I'm going to educate our listeners here because I'm sure they've never heard this before. But, of course, Robert Moore's dad, Dayton, is the general manager of the Royals. That's never been said on TV one time, never been in any published articles. But second round, 49th overall, his slot value is $1,584,100. He smacked 30 home runs over the last 2 years. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he actually broke Heston Kerstad's record in 2021 as a freshman, and he was of course draft eligible after 2 years because he turned 21 in time. So I think if I remember correctly, Evan Lee was the last one that happened to, at least for a Razorback standpoint. But I'll let you talk more about Caden. Of course, like you said, you were there when he got drafted, and as you just mentioned, that was a really special moment, and I'll let you have the floor talking about him.
And you talk about the freshman record, he tied it. I was at Cox and Heston Kerstad with 14. That was a really cool moment for him. You know, that Caden is not about individual goals, even though he has goals set for himself as far as he can go in this game. He was never about the individual numbers. He's one of the most humble young men that I've ever been around. And it was just, it was really cool to be around him and his family. To talk about the draft process, they had talked, and these clubs really do their due diligence. They will call anybody, any coach that's ever been associated to try to find something. They are investing millions and millions of dollars into these players that are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. So they try to find everything. And I'll tell you this, I talked to a Marlins scout one day and he was like, "Tell me something bad." I'm like, "You're not going to find anything bad." I said, "He's kind of hard on himself every now and then, but I said, he's really kind of got out of that. You never see any emotion when he strikes out or gets a bad call." He had some bad calls this year, some really bad calls, and you never really saw it. He was always even keel, and he did everything to help his team win. And you saw that again on Sunday night. So I expected him to go anywhere from 30 to 45. You know, a lot of mock drafts had him as high as 31. Some had him in the 50s. So he started getting calls around 27, 28. Him and his family went back in a room and they were talking to their agent, which is out of California. And then they'd come back out of the room and we were set up to be filmed by MLB Network because Caden was invited to the draft. He elected to stay in Greenbrier and have a party with close friends and family. So we would get into place and get out there and get ready for, you know, what was coming. And I'm looking at who's picking next and thinking, "Oh, well, I talked to these guys, but they had no clue." It was hilarious. So gets a second call, nothing. Gets a third call, and I'm like, "He's going to the Royals at 49. And I said that because the Royals made a run at him in 2020. They tried to get him in the fifth round with a last-minute seven-figure offer, and he turned it down. So the slot is 1.5 for Caden. I think he's going to sign for two, maybe a little bit more. Really excited for him and his family. He's going to get to play in Northwest Arkansas again once he gets to the Northwest Arkansas Naturals. And, you know, I expect him to be in Kansas City for too long. He's just got that tool. He can play third. He can even play second. He played shortstop for Greenbrier because he was the best athlete on the field. The athleticism is underrated. The power is in the bat and the arm, which puts him in the outfield. Now, Arkansas, before Braden Webb came back and they figured out with everything with him, Arkansas was going to stick him in center field. That's where he played in the Cape last year. So really proud for him. Peyton Paulette, the other Arkansan that was drafted on day one. I know Peyton's there was 9 or 10. I'll tell you a story about Peyton. They were playing in the Cal Ripken State Tournament against Sylvan Hills when he was 10 years old, and we were playing at Lone Oak. and he came out on the field Ozzie Smith style doing a double backflip. It was the
right.
He did a backflip.
Yeah,
he did a backflip two in a row. Yeah. So it was really cool. And the kid has so much athleticism. Coached him when he was 14. He was already a freshman at that time, so I got him after high school season. And Peyton was 78 to 81 with his fastball then. He finally grew into the body. You could kind of see him getting to that point to where he was going to grow, he's going to mature. But he always had a real fast, whippy arm. And I talk about fast, whippy arm. He gets it down, back, and through really quick. So to see him, I know he went through Tommy John earlier this year. I got to see him Father's Day weekend when I was in Fayetteville. I talked to him for about 20, 30 minutes, and he's getting back to – he's ready to get throwing. Really excited for him going to the White Sox. And yeah, that wrapped it up for day one, Kyle, and then we move into day two.
Yeah, so just real quick here, that was the second round, 62nd pick for Paulette, $1,158,600 is what he signed for. And, Kevin, I just want to say, add on to what you mentioned, this is a kid, it doesn't matter what team that you root for, you're rooting for him because he came out of high school, he was like in the 350s or 360s as far as his ranking as a pitcher, so he really wasn't, you know, that highly regarded. He got a very, very nasty curveball. He showed that. There's no telling what he could have done had he not gotten hurt, of course, into the COVID year. And then, was it last year that he got hurt? He got hurt in 21. And then had to have Tommy John, of course. So you think about the progress that he's made, not being and rankings are rankings. They're, you know, it's on paper. You can take those as you want. But I think this is a kid that, especially if he stays healthy, a kid, young man, whatever, that if he stays healthy, that there is absolutely no telling what he's going to be able to do with the kind of drive that he probably has right now.
No doubt. And I'm really excited to see once he gets back up there, healthy, throwing, pitching again. A lot of scouts, they love the metrics. One scout said it, his metrics are off the chart. And talking about the spin on his curveball being 3,000 RPM plus, the fastball has really good spin on it. So when you talk about spin, especially with a curveball, it's really hard to pick up. So you see a white dot coming at you, and usually you can pick up the laces, that you can see the spin on which axis they're rotating. Well, the faster they spin, think of it like a car wheel, especially if you got white wall, with the white lettering on there. You can see the letters and what they say, whether they say Goodyear, Michelin, blah, 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 blah. Well, same thing with a baseball. The faster it spins, you can't see the laces. And that's why his curveball is so good. It looks like a fastball coming out of the hand. Next thing you know, it's falling off the table. So in the fastball, if you have really good spin, you get a little late rise. The ball looks like it jumps at the end. So that's why he's so tough to hit. Really excited for him. And, yeah, he's one of those guys. He's kind of got all shucks, but he's a really big competitor. He's a bulldog out there, and I'm really excited for him.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I knew you had told me previously multiple times about the spin rate. I did not even think about that. You couldn't even see the laces. That's truly remarkable. And then moving into Monday with Connor Nolan to the Chicago Cubs. And I want to say real quick, Kevin, you know how I feel about the Cubs. And last year we had Casey as far as the Razorbacks. Now, you know, Wicks, you mentioned Jordan Wicks, you mentioned a second ago, went in the first round of the Cubs. Then Christian Franklin, Casey Opitz. So I'm like, okay, well, am I going to kind of have to pseudo root for the Cubs, which is basically impossible for me to do.
Right.
Now there's even more Cubs, whether it's Connor Nolan or ones with Arkansas ties. So it's this is becoming more and more tough for a Cardinals fan like myself. But Connor went in the ninth round, 263rd overall. His slot value is at 164.5. And Kevin, you talked about Peyton Paulette's curveball. Connor's not going to really have anything that just all of his stuff is not going to completely make you raise your eyebrows or jump off the sheets at you. But the thing about Connor is we saw how clutch he was. Struggled a little bit there. Really throughout his not entire career, but at parts of his career after he had hung up the football cleats for baseball only. But I really don't think you could have asked for much more out of him, what he did this year. And I mean, he caught a ton of hate. That's, you know, unfortunately the way that some fans are. Really up until this season, and he just got better and better as the season went along, and he answered the call. Even though the Razorbacks lost the final game and ended their season in that 2-0 loss to Ole Miss, he did everything that he was supposed to do, just never really got any run support. And so you're really excited for him. 113 strikeouts this year, had a 1.53 ERA and 29 in the third innings in the NCAA tournament, which, of course, those were five starts. Just really cannot say much more about it. Again, he didn't have a Kevin Copps type of season, but he certainly had a great one.
That's exactly right. And the sad thing is both of those players presumably ended with a loss in their career, and that's something that you always struggle to see happen with guys that are such competitors out there, and they were always attacking. That's the thing that you see with Connor Nolan. He was always attacking. It didn't matter. He didn't have a fastball over 93. He had about four pitches, though, and he always attacked. Connor, his freshman year, was 55-14 strikeout to ball to walk ratio. And you love seeing that. So you got a guy that can throw strikes. If you're not going to throw hard, you better throw strikes. It's really cool if you can throw hard and throw strikes. That's when you get to be a first or second round draft pick. So what could Connor do? Connor could compete. He loved Arkansas. He loved being a Razorback. Still loves being a Razorback. That's the thing that's going to decide whether Connor signs. Because, the slot is 162.5 or 162 for whatever. But he's a fourth-year guy. He graduated in 2018. Is he going to get full value? No. He doesn't have any leverage. He's almost 23, maybe 23 right now. So what is he going to do? Can he sign for 80 to 100? Most likely. But he loves Arkansas. Like I said, he may come back and pitch another season, and then I'll go pitch some in pro ball. But does he really want to pitch professionally? Some guys – they get tired around the 23, 24 age, and he's like, man, it'd be cool to go do it, but do I have a realistic shot of making it to the major leagues? And some do it for a little bit just to, get the experience. If they want to go into coaching, that's something Bobby Wernis is a great example of that, Kyle. Bobby Wernis went and played for a little bit, then he got to – and he's really smart, went to coaching – became a manager in the Phillies organization. He actually coached Casey Martin for a little bit. Now he's a volunteer assistant with the Razorbacks. He's going to be a college head coach in no time. So that's something I could see Connor doing maybe. But, hopefully he gets to start his professional career. And like you said, he's with the Cubs. He's got a chance to play with Casey Opens and Christian Franklin, who are at the high A level right now. And he could get, he could get there, by next year and possibly get to throw to his old battery mate once again.
Yeah, talking about Bobby Wernis, he actually, when I was a very, very green podcaster, not that I'm any good now, but when I was at least very green, he was one of the first former Razorbacks that I ever interviewed, and I believe he was with the Phillies organization coaching at that time.
Yeah, he
got drafted by them, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, and he was coaching there, and it was very evident. He never said he wanted to come to the Razorbacks to coach, but it was very evident of his love for the Hogs. Of course, another one of those guys out of the Kansas City area that Dave Van Horn has always recruited so well. Speaking of Bobby, yeah, definitely got a bright future for him and a bright future for Connor, no matter what route he decides to take. But moving on to Tuesday, now Blake Adams, this is a former Razorback out of Springdale Harbor who has since made his way to Kansas State, right-handed pitcher that got drafted by the Colorado Rockies in the 13th round, 386th overall. Now, Kevin, he had a lot of hype coming in to Arkansas. That was around the time of the COVID year. I know that he actually got maybe two or three starts. I know he got at least one before the season ended up shutting down. Had definitely had some freshman struggles, but talk about what he brings to the Colorado Rockies organization.
Yeah, Blake, he was a weekend starter as a freshman. Coming in there, he was a 2019 grad. So the 2020 year, I think he started the first weekend. You had Connor Nolan, Patrick Wicklander, and Blake Adams, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
So you had guys that had all knew each other. That I think they had played together for a weekend out in Arizona one time. So Blake was very, very heralded coming out of Arkansas. They thought he might be a draft pick. He had a low 90s fastball. Blake really matured pretty quick. He was a good hitter too. I think he hit 7 home runs this senior year for Harbor. Won a state championship, beat Conway, beat Jordan Wicks, actually, had Jordan's senior year. So that was a really good game. Blake pitched at Arkansas a little bit, but he struggled with command. He struggled with really, getting his secondary pitch going. Had a little, issue, got upset, and got a little hothead after a game. think he punched a dugout or something, and you know, that was it from there. Goes to Kansas State. Kansas State, obviously, that's where Jordan Wicks went. That's where Connor McCullough from Maumelle went after he went to Arkansas. So, got a couple of Razorback commits that were up there. He did good for Kansas State this year. He's a guy that, you know, decent fastball, you know, 91, 93, may bump it up to a 4 or 5 every now and then. But he's got a chance to pitch for a little bit because he's been doing it a while. If he stays healthy, we'll see, you know. Developing the secondary stuff, you've seen at a later age, like Kevin Copps did, you can really figure out how to spin a baseball. So, wish Blake the best. I know he'll get up there and compete. That's what he did for K-State this year. He was their Friday night guy.
Now, I don't know how much information you have on him, but I know that he has one more year left of eligibility, or if he decided to come back to college, do you feel like he'll probably end up going the pro route?
I think that this will be it for him. You know, he was a 3-year guy this year, but you get the COVID year. So, yeah, technically he could come back for another year. He's in the same boat that Robert Moore's in as far as eligibility goes.
Gotcha. Okay.
He could come back. He could come back for another year, but I doubt he does. And that's maybe he's like, maybe I can increase my draft stock because this was the first year I was a full starter. I haven't got the chance to talk to him this afternoon. I've spoken with Blake and his father in the past, got to know them really well throughout his recruitment and time at Arkansas. Great family. So if I get something, I'll post it on Twitter and tag Scorebook Live. Just keep checking with us with our news and updates.
Definitely. And also, too, on another guy that got drafted, we got two more left, of course, from Tuesday. Tyler Cleveland, right-handed pitcher, native of Sheridan, that went to UCA, got drafted by the Seattle Mariners in the 14th round, 426th overall. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, you know, like I said, saw this young man when he was younger and knew he was a really good baseball player. His dad was a good baseball player. I played with his dad in baseball. Shane, his dad, was a couple years older than me. And he really good pitcher. Never really did anything after high school. But Tyler really jumped into that. And when I started getting into travel ball and figuring out what it was, Tyler played for Dairy Queen. And that's where Jordan Wicks, that team and everything. And they traveled all across the country and did some big things. So I got to watch him grow up. Tyler never loses. He is a freaking winner at every level. And that's the thing about him. He's not going to blow the gun up. He's not going to be, you know, mid-90s arm, but he throws strikes and gets out. So that can keep pitchers in the league for a while. And that's the best thing about him is he's going to go out there and compete, do his job. He's 6'3". He's only 185, 190, Kyle, so he could add some muscle. And he can get up into a pro organization, eat right, do everything that you're supposed to do to gain weight, add weight, and he could be that guy that turns into somebody that could pitch for 10 or 12 years. You see these late-round picks do it all the time because they have the mindset to go out there and they're going to work hard and outwork everybody that they can and do the best they can, even though they might not have the top end stuff or top of the line stuff as far as velocity and everything else. He's got the intangibles, and I think the intangibles can take him a long way.
And then last but not least, another one that you did previously touch on some, James Hicks, right-handed pitcher, initially went to Crowder College when he graduated from Conway High and then made his way to South Carolina. He was picked in the 15th round, 437th overall. He'll be in the same organization as the man Blaine Knight.
That's exactly right. He's going to the Orioles. The Orioles had a really good draft. Of course, they took Jackson Holliday, Matt Holliday's son. Matt Holliday, of course, was a Cardinal, so I had to throw that in there for you.
Oh, yeah, I loved Matt Holliday.
Yeah, and St. Louis loves him as well. And Matt, of course, was on his brother's staff as a volunteer assistant along with Robin Ventura, Rob Walton, one of the best college coaching staffs in the nation because of all the major league knowledge that's there. So Jackson was committed to Oklahoma State, but I digress. Yeah, Orioles had a really good draft. James Hicks came out of Conway with the mid-80s fastball. As a walk-on to Crowder, was 86 to 88 after his freshman year. I got to see him pitch when he was 19. He was okay. He had a slider. We actually played against him, beat him. You know, he came in through. We got some hits off of him, had that really good team with Caden Wallace, Ethan Bates, Clayton Graves, Houston King, those guys. And he just kept getting better, kept getting better. Went to another year at Crowder. Next thing you know, he's 89-91. Then he goes to South Carolina. Now he's throwing 92-94. Where did he come from? He got bigger. He got stronger. He matured. Now he's a 15th-round draft pick, and he has a chance to go play for money. And it's one of those really good stories that you see. His family, like I said, comes from Conway background, went to school with Jordan Wicks. Those two fed off of each other. They're winners. James Hicks is going to – he's going to give it all he's got. His stuff is pretty good. And, of course, you get drafted, your stuff is always going to be pretty good. And I say that from a scout level of 20 to 80 scale and saying, look, he's got a chance to make it a little bit. He's going to have to refine the secondary stuff to get it on a level where he can pitch for a long time in the professional ranks.
And that will do it for all of our six native Arkansans that were drafted. As always, some great analysis from Kevin. You know, of course, I'm like I said, Kevin, you know, you saved the day on this baseball stuff, because if it wasn't for your analysis all season long and also including in this draft, wouldn't have had much other than maybe reading off a few scores and then trying to do what we can do. And so that is going to wrap up baseball for the year, as we talked about there at the beginning of the segment. Kevin, it's truly been a blast in year one of doing this. I really think that, you know, we've did a really good job, especially you, you know, did a really good job on the baseball side of things, just bringing not just coverage to the state tournament. We've had that for a long time, the state tournament, the state championship games. We've had that for a long time, but just from the pretty much the beginning of baseball season and then the day-by-day basis. You know, I think that really added something to Scorebook Live that we were able to do, and definitely look forward to next year. But until then, we're going to look forward to football season and hopefully some cooler weather sooner than later, even though I'm not holding my breath on that.
Absolutely. And, yeah, Kyle, you know, we've been partnering together for the last 2 years, and we've got to do it in the high school ranks with something we love to do now. And it was really fun, you know, bouncing ideas off each other. We're getting to work together, and I think it just makes the product even better when you have a passion and you work with like-minded people. And, you know, I set out on a mission 4 years ago, and that mission's coming to fruition. We're going to have even more stuff on Scorebook Live in terms of baseball. I'm going to write baseball all year for them, along with football season coming up. And I'll be on the Buzz co-hosting the Friday night scoreboard show. The Ortho Arkansas High School Football Scoreboard Show with Randy Rainwater and Barry Grooms. That's always a mouthful, but I'm getting better at it. So looking forward to football season and getting out there, like you said, with some cooler weather.
Yeah, definitely. And it's based on the weather reports I've seen, it's definitely not going to come anytime soon. But I'm just looking forward to going to East Tennessee here pretty soon. That's one of the reasons why I'll kind of be off the grid at the end of July, beginning of August, because we're going to head to East Tennessee and hopefully – I know it's going to get a lot of rain there in the Smoky Mountains, but at least it'll be mid to high 80s. So I'm going to try to bring maybe some of that back, and I'll maybe collect some in a jar and let it out and see if that works. But that'll do it for segment one of the baseball recap with Kevin. And up next, we talk with 4A state champion BJ Zipfel of the Valley View Lady Blazers. We now welcome 4A state champion and former head coach BJ Zipfel to recap the Lady Blazers' run to the state title game, finishing 25-5. And coach, I know it's been an interesting turn of events for you in the last couple of weeks after hoisting the trophy. You've now stepped away from coaching and are in full-time administration. And so I know we're just a few months out from the new school year beginning, but how does it feel at this point? Is it any different?
No, it still feels pretty good. To be honest with you, the state tournament trophy is still in my living room. I've had the little plaque taken off of it, you know, to get the kids' names put on there and stuff. So I'm kind of waiting for that to come back in. So I've passed it, you know, at my house every day since then. And still kind of hard to believe I got one, to be honest with you. But, you know, we've been chasing it a long time and finally got one. And what a way to go out.
Yeah, no doubt. And before we go into a little bit of more specific games of the year, I want to give a little bit of summary overall. Like I mentioned, you guys went 25-5 and had no back-to-back losses, which I think that's extremely impressive, especially with the grind of the softball season, and had multiple winning streaks. So just talk about how the girls were able to stay consistent and just kept winning to eventually claim the school's first state title.
Well, first, I'm just going to say talent. I mean, they, you know, you can talk about, you know, me and assistant coaches all you want, but when it comes down to it, you know, if you don't have the horses, you know, in the race, you're going to get left behind. And And, you know, we've just been fortunate here to have, you know, a lot of talented kids and a lot of kids that just love it, you know, and a lot of kids that play softball really year round. I mean, I've the last couple of years, I've really only shared, you know, athletes, just a few, you know, to be honest with you. Most of our kids play softball all year long.
And one thing I do want to touch on as well before we do get into the season is Northeast Arkansas, just the amount of success up there. Of course, Tuckerman and East Poinsett County in 2A, y'all in 4A, just an immense. And there's so many other teams that you can name.
Don't forget Green County Tech.
Green County, that's another one that I was going to mention. You know, y'all played them twice this year. And I know you lost in the first game and then lost to them later on in the season. But it's not like you guys lost to anybody that was not good. All of them went to at least the state tournament, and some of them made – deep state runs. And so I just want to talk about the growth of the game. I've talked to a couple of other coaches already, but none yet up in your area. Of course, I will at some point, but just the growth of fast pitch softball in particular over the last 20, 25 years. Talk about it from your perspective.
Well, I mean, I've only been in it for the last 12 years. But you know, just in that amount of time, I mean, a lot of our kids are playing all summer, you know, and then when school starts, you know, they play in the fall, you know. In fact, I've had some, you know, some Fridays where we were practicing, you know, in August, September, October with the girls and say, hey, we got a tournament that starts, you know, on Saturday. Do you mind if we leave? You know, it's in Timbuktu. Do you mind if we take off Friday and make sure we can get to our tournament? Yes, that's fine. You know, go do that. We don't play till March. So, you know, parents that are invested in their kids, you know, they pay a lot of money. They spend a lot of time. They're on the road a lot, you know, and, you know, all those things make their kids better. You know, and that's a lot of stuff. That's work that we don't have to put in. You know, they're doing it on their own. So it's really helped us, obviously.
And as I said, all five of your losses were to very good teams. GCT twice, BB, I know they got upset in the first round, but you look at them all season, some of the best pitching in the state, regardless of class.
Sure, they just kept throwing good pitchers out there. They threw, you know, we played it, you know, it's a non-conference game. So, you know, our Rick Riley did not pitch that game. She was injured. But, you know, we were just kind of using it as, hey, let's play each other and see what happens. I mean, and she threw four or five pitchers, and once you threw out there was just as good as the next one. I thought, man, yeah, what a luxury to have, you know, that many pitchers that can throw that well. So yeah, you're right.
Well, and building off of that, there's two trends that I saw, and it's not just this year, and you could say this, you could point to multiple reasons why teams go to state championships and win them, but the two trends that you see consistently is good pitching and the tough conference schedule. And so just building off a little bit off of that, I know you've kind of touched on it a little bit already, but talk about your scheduling. Now, Cabot was one of those. I think that was, for me, from the outside looking in as a media member, I think that Cabot game for me was like, okay, wow, Valley View really is a true contender, because you guys were the first one to beat them. They were 13 or 14-0 at that point. You win that pitcher's duel 2-1. Was that maybe for y'all? And I know that you had had quite a few lopsided games up to that point and were on a winning streak yourself, but was that maybe the game where you were like, holy cow, these girls are really true contenders, or did you kind of know that already?
Well, I mean, we've been pretty fortunate here the last, you know, really the last several years. I mean, I've thought every year we have a chance to win this thing. We have enough talent to do it, you know, and obviously that always starts with pitching. But, you know, a lot of things have to go right. You know, I mean, you don't, you know, the best team doesn't always win. You know, you don't just have to be good. You got to be lucky, you know, and a lot of things have to go your way. And they did for us this year. You know, you talk about our schedule, you know, Cabot, yeah, they're good. When we got to the finals, you know, I told the girls, you know, just a few minutes before we played, I said, really, this is the fifth finals game that we've played in this year. You know, we played EPC, we played Green County Tech twice, we played Cabot, and then, you know, here we are now, you know, in the real thing, and that's why we schedule those things. But, yeah, I mean, Cabot, they're good, man. I mean, and they really, you know, in their finals game, we got there in time to watch it. You know, they had a bad first inning. And after that, it was dead even, you know, and that was all it took, you know, and that's really all it takes when you get that far is, you know, one, one, you know, bad thing or two bad things, sometimes you can't recover from it, you know, when you get to that point. And I think that's what happened to Cabot. But yeah, they're very good, very good. And I think we might have had two hits that game, to be honest with you. I know we scored the go-ahead run on a ground ball to the second baseman with our fastest runner on third base. And so she took off, you know, and the throw was right on the money. And to be honest with you, she probably should have been about two steps out, but she out-athleted the catcher and went around and over her to dive, you know, safely to second base. So I was watching like this, you know, because she took off and I thought, she ain't going to make it. She's not going to make it. She's not going to make it. And all of a sudden she went up and over and around. And I thought nobody else could have done that. I mean, we had the one person on third base that could have, that probably could have scored that run.
That was Winkfield, wasn't it?
I was on a Winkfield, and you know, she's a track athlete too. They won the state championship in track. The girls did this year. So yeah, she went to several track meets where she was the high point. You know, she's just a great athlete, and it just worked out for us. Like I say, sometimes you gotta be lucky, and we were, you know, we had the right person on third base, and I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well, and going back to your pitching, I certainly got to touch on Riley Smith, just pointing out the championship game in particular. And, you know, all the idiot talking heads like myself, I've gone on record plenty of times and said throughout the season, I think Nashville's hands, though I did give you guys tons of credit, I thought Nashville throughout the year was certainly the best team, and you guys proved that you were. And I felt like that she was probably the best kept secret in the state this year. Obviously the teams that played you guys understood what she was about and what she could do. But what was crazy to me was out of the 86 pitches from the stats that I have, out of the 86 pitches in the state championship game, 70 of those were strikes. And just the way that she was able to shut down that batting lineup 1 through 9, Boomer Brown told me, and he's a two-time state champion head coach, he told me that was the best 1 through 9, or at least probably the best 1 through 9 that he's ever had. And she held him to 2 hits. And just what she was able to do, all year, and throwing the majority of the innings for y'all. Talk about her toughness and consistency all season.
Well, you know, I told you just a while ago, you know, sometimes when a couple of things go wrong in the state championship game, you know, you can't recover. Well, you know, that happened to us right off the bat. You know, I mean, we had 2 errors right off the bat that, you know, cost us the only run of the game. And, you know, being a sophomore, you just wonder, hey, on, you know, at this point where we're at right now, is she going to be able to, you know, forget about those things? Because they weren't her fault. You know, I mean, there were pitches that she should have made. They were plays that we should have made, plays that we normally do make. And, you know, in her, you know, in her defense, I mean, she just said, I'm going to bow up and just do it anyway, you know, and that's what she did, you know. Instead of her whole mindset was, you know, I'm just going to do what I always do. And, you know, I'm just going to trust these my teammates behind me, and they're going to make plays. And from that point on, we played the best defensive softball at the biggest time. I mean, because, you know, Nashville didn't just softly put the ball in play a lot of times. They hit some shots, and we made the plays. You know, we made some diving plays, some leaping plays. You know, we made a lot of plays, and that's what it takes, you know. But Riley always throws strikes, always. She did that as a freshman. I mean, she throws strikes. She's around the plate all the time. In fact, when she does get in trouble, you know, it's because, you know, she's thrown a strike when we really didn't want her to, you know. But that's hard to do, you know, when you spent your whole life, throw strikes, and all of a sudden, well, it's 0-2 or, you know, 1-2, and I don't need to throw a strike right here. And that's hard to do, especially when you're, you know, a freshman and sophomore. But, you know, she's gotten better at, well, I'm going to make this pitch look like a strike, but it's going to be far enough that you can't get the fat part of the bat on it. And she's got really, really good at that. And, you know, obviously she's still got 2 more years left, and I don't see her getting any worse at it. I see her getting, you know, a lot better at it. So.
Yeah. And I was going to bring up the plays that y'all made, particularly on defense. I was covering Buck Ringgold covered this game for us at Scorebook Live. I was actually covering a soccer game previously. I think I made it over at the end of the first inning. And that's the thing that really, outside of Riley's play, you guys, I know that you've had a very impressive infield, just an impressive defensive team overall, and of course, really good at the plate as well. But that's the thing that stuck out to me. It was like, it didn't matter if it was going for a crazy, a high ball or a ground. It didn't matter what it was. I don't think that there was any kind of miscue whatsoever throughout the entire game. That's why you won 2-1
My third baseman made some great plays at third base. She made a diving play. She got a short hop, coming in across, to the circle. On a really fast run, a little slapper that slapped it off the turf, and it was high, and she got it just on the short hop, which is a super tough play to make. She fielded it cleanly, made the throw. I mean, it was, it was great, and then they hit that line shot there in either the sixth or the seventh, my little second baseman, Mackenzie Whitlock, who's a freshman.
She's great,
by the way.
She is
had
fantastic.
A great year, basketball player. So she's one that I do share, but there's only a few, but she's, she's super athletic and just, leaped up there and made a heck of a catch. And if she doesn't, that ball's probably in the gap and rolls to the fence. And, who knows what happens to, mindsets and all those types of things at that point,
Sure. And you talked just a second ago about Anna being a track athlete and then the girls winning state. It was a great year overall for Valley View, particularly for spring sports. One state you guys did, and then the girls track team, baseball and soccer made it to the state finals. So Valley View was very well represented at the Benton Athletic Complex. Saw a lot of blue and yellow there that entire weekend. I can imagine the month of May was pretty exciting up there on your campus overall.
It was. They put us on a big campus wide send off. I mean, we all three of the buses, the soccer bus, the baseball bus, the softball bus, we stopped every kid, and every teacher and administrator and, custodian, bus driver, they were all lined in the streets. We stopped at every campus. They were all outside waiting on us. The kids got off the bus and, gave them high fives and they gave us high fives and we took pictures. And I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, we're very, very lucky here. We get a lot of support. We get a lot of support campus wide.
We've been talking with Coach BJ Zipfel, winning coach of the 4A state softball champion Valley View Lady Blazers. And Coach, I really appreciate your time. Congratulations on riding off into the sunset, at least in terms of your Valley View softball coaching career. And I want to wish you the very best of luck in your new administrative role up there.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And that will close the door on episode 39, along with our baseball and softball coverage for 2022. I want to thank all of the baseball and softball coaches who took time to recap their state title runs, and of course, all of you for your continued support. Now that we'll be flipping the script to football, don't forget you can read all of our previews on scorebooklive.com. And once we hit August, we'll be previewing each class one by one. We will see you in a couple of weeks. For all of us here at SB Live, I'm Kyle Sutherland. Stay cool out there.